Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune into Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer. And Bob, this is the final program of our series, Evidence for the Exodus.
I have so enjoyed this, Fred. Just today, we heard from a rancher in Kansas who called. His name is Ray. He has a 16-year-old son, Reed. And he said, while they're feeding the cattle, they listened to the RSR podcast, found the show about a year ago, went back to the archives. And he said they love Evidence for the Exodus. What an astounding series it is. And really, we're just relaying the work of so many others that have uncovered this awesome historical evidence for the book of Exodus.
Yes, it's been great. And Bob, before we start, I've got an RSR news alert. I mean, this is literally hot off the presses.
Okay.
Dr. Andrew Snelling is suing.
Geologist with
geologist.
Answers in Genesis. Yep.
He's suing the Grand Canyon.
Wait a minute. How do you sue a canyon?
How do you sue a canyon?
Oh, you mean the Park Service?
The Park Service.
He's suing the National Park Service. You gave me a printout of this, Fred. Thank you. From WorldNet Daily. By the way, this is written by a friend of Real Science Radio, Bob Unruh, there at WND. And he's suing them because they will not allow him to do research as a geologist in the canyon.
Yeah.
The canyon is 200 and some miles long.
I wonder why they won't let him do research.
Because, and they've really made it explicit, because of his religious beliefs.
Yeah. Yep.
So the Alliance Defending Freedom, they're going to represent him. And I think the National Park Service is going to back down. They better.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
he is a qualified, degreed geologist. And you know, Fred, at the canyon there, there's no depth to which they will not sink to stand in the way of a creationist. Those dirty dogs.
Yeah.
So anyway, we pray for Andrew Snelling and Ken Ham. I have the honor of going to the Ark in June. I can't wait.
Oh, great.
A Christian creationist family camp in Indiana. And then on that Friday, this is mid-June, the bunch of us, we're going to Ken Ham's Noah's Ark.
Noah's Ark. And I can't wait to hear about that.
Yes.
It's right next to the Creation Museum, which is fantastic
yes.
in itself.
Yes.
So I'm hearing really good things from the Ark, and I'm going to want a field report back
from
you, Bob.
I'll give it to you, Fred.
Bob, before we go on to the Exodus and the evidence for the Exodus, you have a short story that you're almost completed.
Yes.
And I can't wait for this to actually hit the presses. I mean, you're on the verge.
It's so fun, and it's because of our series, Real Science Radio's list of evidence for the Exodus. This is called If 10 Plagues Hit America.
Yeah, just for a preview, the first plague is the worms.
The worms. That's right. This is upgraded to today's culture and dispensation, and it is a short story, 10 plagues, all brand new, very different.
If God judged America today.
Yes. What would these 10 plagues be like? How would the culture respond? How would the government respond? How would the church respond?
Who would be Ipawer?
Would
that be Al Franken?
That's a very good question. Yeah, right. So at any rate, that will be available on our store. People could pre-order it now. It's $9.99. But I think if folks have a tenth of as much fun reading this as I've had writing it, it will be so entertaining, but also educational. It's a different way of looking at biblical principles.
You know, Bob, you gave me a pre-copy, and I think maybe after an hour or two, I'd finish reading this thing. But from what I've read so far, it's great. It's entertaining. I appreciate this pre-copy before the presses. I feel honored.
Yeah. So, hey, maybe if I die before finishing it, that'll be worth something.
It will be, and then
it'll
sell
it. It'll be worth, you know, you could recycle paper these days.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be worth something. So today, we will be sharing the research presented at a scholarly conference on the Exodus. This conference was hosted by the University of California, San Diego in 2013, not too long ago.
So it was called the Exodus Conference and attracted a lot of big name secular scholars, archaeologists, historians, scientists, Egyptologists and linguists.
Yes.
And to varying degrees, some who believe that the Exodus is actually based on a historical event.
Yes.
Shocker that some of those guys showed up there.
That's right. So then 2 years later, there is a publisher of academic journals. It's Springer, respected around the world. They agreed to publish the proceedings of this conference from the University of California in this hardcover text, Fred, that you and I got some couple months ago. Here it is. In fact, I'll let the audience hear it.
Yeah, that's a big book.
Now, you could tell that's a quality book.
Yeah? It is.
It sounds like a quality book to me. And its title is Israel's Exodus in Transdisciplinary Perspective.
Yeah.
It's a mouthful. It's expensive. It's $130.
$130. Holy celestial cow, Bob.
Hey, you're jumping ahead.
I'm jumping ahead here. We'll get to the celestial cow later.
That's right. The Egyptians have their ancient holy celestial cow
book.
Yeah,
but I saw this price. I asked you, how much was this on Amazon?
$130. And even the digital, if you want to save money and get the PDF version, it runs about $100.
$100, yep.
Chapter 19, pages 259 to 281, it's worth its weight in gold. Now, it's not only chapter 19 that has this valuable information, but this chapter lists many examples of ancient Egyptian literature that contain parallels to the Exodus. It's presented by Brad Sparks. But before we share what his research has uncovered, check out the three editors of this volume. Fred, it's Levy, Schneider, and Propp. And there's one managing editor, too. But these guys, and we're not saying that these editors all agree completely with what Brad Sparks concluded, but they found his research sufficiently scholarly to be included. And we have been convinced, Fred and I, by the preponderance of the evidence that ancient Egyptians wrote a lot about the historical event that we know of as the Exodus.
Yeah, there's a ton of it, and a lot of it's covered in chapter 19 of this book. It's awesome.
The first editor, and he was a leading organizer of the conference, Thomas Levy. We're going to give you an idea of the gravitas of these guys.
Yep, big name.
There are no slouches among all the authors in here and the editors. Thomas Levy is a distinguished professor at the University of California, San Diego, chairman of the Department of the Archaeology of Ancient Israel and Neighboring Lands.
Yeah, and he's award-winning. He's a principal investigator of many archaeological field projects in Israel and Jordan, and they were funded by the National Geographic Society, not, our favorite society.
Right. No.
They're full of fake news.
They raped the world. They plundered the world and took the riches of all the indigenous peoples to their museums. No, just kidding.
Yeah.
Well, they sort of did that. But they're also godless. They're also atheists.
They are, yeah.
They hate God.
And the other godless atheist organization, the National Science Foundation.
So they both funded the digs of Thomas Levy, his projects, field projects. Pretty awesome. Second editor, a guy named Thomas Schneider, professor of Egyptology and Near Eastern Studies at the University of British Columbia, Vancouver. We've been up there a couple times. Even recently, there's a men's group that flew Cheryl and I there for a week, and I got to speak to this men's group on Real Science Radio topics. What a great time we had, Fred.
Yep. And this guy's gotten around. He's taught at New York University and the University of California at Berkeley. So the guy must be a liberal or else he wouldn't have got in there. There would have been protests.
Yeah, that's
He's
right.
been at University of Toronto, Vienna.
And he's research professor for the Swiss National Science Foundation and has held the chair of Egyptology at the University of Wales. He got all his degrees in Egyptology at the University of Basel in Switzerland. So he's a big shot. And he specializes in Egyptian interconnections with the Levant. ISIL, ISIS.
Yeah.
Right? The Islamic State.
Mm-hmm.
ISIL, Islamic State of Syria and the Levant. So the Levant is basically the Eastern Mediterranean, Israel to Syria. So he's an expert in Egypt's connection with Canaan, the land of Canaan.
See, on Real Science Radio, you even learn what the L stands for in ISIL.
That's exactly right. And in their chronology, and he's founder and editor-in-chief of the Journal of Egyptian History, another big shot.
Yep, for sure. The third guy is William Propp, and he's a professor of Biblical Hebrew and related languages at the University of California in San Diego, and he's taught at Dartmouth College.
Yeah, anthropology, history, linguistics. So there's one more editor, and he's the managing editor, and that is Brad Sparks himself.
Yeah.
Fred, we've been mentioning Brad from our first episode. He was the principal organizer for that Exodus conference. Chapter 19 is his. It's titled Egyptian Texts Relating to the Exodus, Parallels in the Egyptology Literature. And before we get to his chapter, Fred, 19, the entire volume opens with this paragraph that it's just stunning.
It sure is. So here's the opening paragraph of this text. The grand narrative about Israel's exodus from Egypt, mainly preserved in the book of Exodus in the Hebrew Bible, holds momentous significance for ancient Israel, Jewish identity, Christianity, even Islam, and Western thought, and deeply impacted the formation of academic disciplines studying the ancient Near East. It has been a pervasive theme, and the Exodus lies at the heart of a controversy about the reliability and origins of the biblical narrative, not the least in the context of research on the emergence of the nation of Israel.
Yeah. So, I mean, Israel has such a significant role in the history of the world. I mean, billions of people believe in the God of Abraham. Billions.
Yeah. Yep.
Every monotheistic religion says that the one true God is the God of Abraham.
Yep.
And atheists say the Jews were an insignificant tribe that have no bearing on understanding of mankind.
Yeah, and they're so insignificant that the UN always just leaves them alone, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. And the Bible says, even to the end times, that Jerusalem would be the center of tension for the world.
Oh, yeah. And I don't know the exact number, Bob, but how many sanctions has the UN written against Israel compared to the rest of the world?
Yeah.
It's mind-boggling. It's way up there, like 70-80%.
There's a hatred for the Jews, as there is a Muslim hatred for Christians, because the Jews are identified in the Bible as God's chosen people.
That's right.
And so for a knee-jerk reaction, that's why liberals hated George W. Bush. He was pro-abortion, pro-homosexuality, socialist, but they thought he represented Christians, so they hated him.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Same thing with Trump, but in a weird way.
Yeah.
But at any rate, Brad Sparks, he heads up his group, the Archaeological Research Group in San Diego, and he helped Tom Levy, that first editor, assemble the scholarly proceedings into this text that we have right here, published by Springer. So Brad is not just one of the conference speakers. He was the organizer and then the managing editor of this text.
That's right. So since 1844, parallels to the Exodus have been found in dozens of Egyptian texts, and these parallels have been published in the academic literature by professional Egyptologists, archaeologists, and biblical scholars, some of who attended this Exodus conference.
Yeah, that is just so cool. A number of them have passed away, but the discoveries found in the more recent decades, I mean, some of these guys are in their 60s, 70s, some of the world-renowned Egyptologists were there at the conference. So Brad Sparks spoke. Let's take just 1 minute and hear just a little bit of his introduction.
These Egyptian Exodus parallels have been published in isolation and never been brought together in one place and studied until now. In fact, as long ago as 1925, Asor's Chester McCown had pointed out in Harvard Theological Review, in his study where he attempted to draw parallels between Hebrew and Egyptian apocalyptic literature, he said, so far as I know, the available material, in other words, comparing Egyptian and Hebrew apocalyptic, has not been collected in any one place, and its weight, therefore, has not been carefully ascertained, nor have the critical and historical conclusions which follow been fully drawn. And that situation, that pattern of isolated referencing of these parallels in Egyptian texts, has continued to the present. So hopefully we can make a change in that pattern.
Yeah, patterns of evidence. So the pattern is that some scholar will find a text and he'll translate it into English or German or whatever and say, this is a stunning parallel to the Exodus.
Yeah, sounds a lot like the Exodus.
And then that's it. There is no one who has assembled all of these stunning parallels into a single database. And a number of scholars have pointed that out, that it had never been done. And Fred, if it would have helped to disprove the Bible, it would have been
done. It would have been done many times over.
Yes, that's right. But it has never been done because people don't like it. Because anything that looks like it might support the scriptures is despised by our major institutions.
Yep. So I love how his chapter starts, and it begins like this. Some 30 ancient Egyptian texts with Exodus parallels or Exodus-like content have been identified by 56 Egyptologists, archaeologists, and Semiticists from 1844 to date in the professional literature.
Wow.
So now additional...
Well, let me see. How many is that now? So 56 scholars.
Scholars.
Mostly Egyptologists, archaeologists.
Yep.
They have found and published in the scientific literature, the scholarly literature, the journals, 30 different texts, which they identified as having a parallel to the Exodus.
That's right.
From Egypt,
not
from ancient Egypt.
Not two or five, 30.
30.
So now he goes on, additional texts are identified in the present study for a total of more than 90 Egyptian texts containing Exodus parallels.
90. And the way that Brad Sparks found these additional texts, and we do this all the time, if we're doing research, let's say, on Pluto, in the continuing shocking discoveries from Pluto, because Pluto looks young. And it's just so awesome, the program we did on the list of solar system formation problems. Mm-hmm. And then you get to Pluto, and it all blows wide open. It's so fabulous. And NASA's guy says, we have no idea how solar systems form. We had a theory, and we know it's totally wrong.
Yep.
So when we research a show like that, you read a journal paper, and the footnotes in the paper lead you to other papers. You go to those papers, and very quickly you find out that you're never going to end.
Yeah.
You're going to run out of life, right? Well, Brad Sparks did that. You read about those 30 Egyptian texts, and they have footnotes, and it's like a rabbit trail. And they lead you elsewhere and elsewhere and elsewhere. And eventually he ends up now with more than 30. How many does he have?
He has 90 now. 90.
90 Egyptian texts containing Exodus parallels. So then he quotes a few big name scholars like Julius Wellhausen and John Osman. And Wellhausen, he's a biblical skeptic. Well, he's dead now, but he was a giant in the field of biblical criticism.
So he's not a skeptic anymore.
No, exactly right. And he called for a much needed investigation into the Egyptian traditions that underlie the Exodus. And that's from basically an atheist. Then there's this guy, John Osman. He is a German Egyptologist, PhD from Heidelberg University. And what he said about the whole claim that there's no parallel to the Exodus. Remember what Peter Boyle said, Denver talk show host?
Oh, yeah. There's no evidence for the Exodus.
Just in the last few weeks.
Yeah, last few weeks. I think
on two different shows.
I think he needs 91 texts, we only got to 90, so there's no evidence.
So Jan Osman, he says that the consensus view, sort of like the consensus on global warming, the consensus view is now highly contested.
That's right. He goes on to say, perhaps too much unanimity as to the non-historicity of the Exodus. The old certainties of the Exodus are, as pure myth, are gone.
Wow. So he said, everybody is in such agreement that there's no parallel to the Exodus. Something's wrong with that. That is now highly contested. The old certainties are gone. Too much unanimity. Too much.
Too much of it. Yep.
Yeah. Well, it's groupthink. It's like a herd mentality. Oh, it's like Peter Boyle's. There is no evidence for the Exodus.
Yeah.
None.
There's.
I never saw one.
Never.
All right. So Brad Sparks goes on to mention scholars who published papers in this volume, in this book. Thomas Schneider, who we referenced, one of the editors, he finds a potentially significant parallel to Exodus chapter 12. That's where the firstborn,
the plague of the firstborn,
died, in several late Egyptian texts. Then there's a Gary Rendsburg. He's from Rutgers University. He published in this volume, and he finds several Egyptian texts with parallels to the Exodus, including the drowned soldiers and Book of Gates, which have paintings from the royal tombs going back to about the 15th century BC.
And Brad Sparks, he independently found the dramatic Egyptian imagery of the walls of water in a parting sea.
Yeah.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
And how many stories in history are there of drowned soldiers? You know,
right.
There wouldn't be a lot. So Bob, reading the caption of this image of these soldiers in the water, it's real interesting that it says a hieroglyphic text caption between walls states that water had once been present and will return in deadly fashion. So there's no, it doesn't look like a naval
text.
Battle or anything. These are just men dead in the water.
Yeah, it does look like that, right? And so, and this scene is connected with another of drowned soldiers in the same waterway or the same body of water. Hey, this is great evidence.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the artwork here, Fred, it's reproduced in this chapter 19. Of the drowned soldiers in the parted sea, and we happen to know it's the Red Sea, the artwork is stunning.
It is. Very interesting.
I think people will love it. I recommend buying this book.
Yeah, I do too, actually.
I mean, Celestial Cow, it's expensive.
Yeah.
But actually, one of our listeners got this book for us, Fred.
Yeah. Yep.
So wonderful.
It is.
Thank you, guys.
And so speaking of the Celestial Cow, there's this destruction of mankind text,
yes.
And it's referred to as also the Book of the Celestial Cow.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It mentions the I Am. Well, now, where have we heard that before?
That's from the burning bush passage
that
Jesus himself
referred to that. Yeah.
Referred to, so affirms the Mosaic authorship, basically, of the Pentateuch.
Yep.
And the scholar who published this, John Gwynne Griffiths, in the Journal of Egyptian Archaeology, calls this a startling parallel.
Startling
parallel to the Exodus, with the name of God being I Am That I Am.
But this qualifies for our list of shocked scientists, maybe?
Yeah, I think so. Now,
startled.
Some linguists will argue with this paper in the Journal of Egyptian Archaeology and say, well, is it really God's name is I Am That I Am, or I Am From Myself, or I Am In Myself?
Mm-hmm.
But you get the point.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So all we're going to do is give a bit of a thumbnail sketch of some of the publications and some of the parallels. But John Osman, who we mentioned earlier, finds what he calls astounding parallels in ancient Egyptian text to the golden calf incident.
Yep.
There is something called the Rhind Mathematical Papyrus.
Didn't you try to find that thing when you were
in
England on your King James only
debate?
What a
debate we had, right?
Yeah.
King James only?
Yep.
RSR.org.
You slaughtered that poor guy,
well,
the King
thanks,
James only
Will
guy.
Will Duffy and I. RSR.org/KJO.
Yeah.
What a great debate.
It was. And you took the side of not King James only.
Right. That God's word fills the world in 1,000 tongues.
That's right.
And
so
what,
the Japanese aren't left out in the cold because of
they
the,
don't
King
read
James
the,
only.
Right. 1611 King James.
Yeah.
In fact, Oxford's library, their rare books conservator, gave Will and I access to the 1602 Bishop's Bible, from which the King James was translated.
Did you have someone there to help you translate it? It's incredible.
Because the old English?
Oh, it's incredible
well,
how
we
hard
did
it
have
is to read.
Help, one of the world's leading experts on reading, Secretary Hand. Now, the King James translators, they translate it from the Hebrew and Greek.
Yep.
But they had like about a dozen rules of translation. And the first one was that they will begin with the text, of the Bishop's Bible and stick with that. Stay true to that as much as is possible as they translate from the Hebrew and Greek. So we got the actual, one of the actual Bibles that the translators wrote in, crossed out what the Bishop's Bible said and wrote in interlinear and the marginalia, their new translation, which became the King James Bible.
Yep.
Just awesome. Anyway, while there, I went to Liverpool, the university there, because they have an English translation of the Rhind Mathematical Papyrus.
Which is pretty rare.
RMP. Yeah, you can't get it online. They were unable to find it for me, which was discouraging. But Fred, just 2 days ago, I get an email from a world-class scholar who says, Bob, I saw a couple years ago you put a question on your website about the Rhind Mathematical Papyrus. I'd like to help you with it.
So you put the question up there 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And he happened to come across it.
Yes. And what a tremendous resource this guy will be.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what comes of that.
So at any rate, so this Donald Redford, another scholar, speaks of the striking resemblance between a catastrophic storm and the Rhind Mathematical Papyrus and some of the traditional plagues.
Yep.
These guys, you know, the next one is Hans Godic. He is secular. He's from the University of Vienna. He got his degree at the University of Vienna. He's an Egyptologist and chairman of John Hopkins University's Department of Near Eastern Studies. You know what, Fred? I don't think we have to continue to give their pedigrees.
Yeah, we don't have to do that.
Because obviously they're all top-notch scholars.
That's right. But I love what he said here, that the similarity to the Exodus is so striking that it's difficult to overlook it. He wants to overlook it, but it's difficult.
Yes.
It's so striking.
Yeah, just tremendous. In our thumbnail sketch overview that we're doing, Roland Enmark mentions the striking parallel between Ippur and the description of the Nile flowing with blood in the Old Testament. Of course, it's a striking parallel. And here's a scholar, and he wrote about this in 2009. So these are references going back decades and more recent.
Yeah, how many stories do we know of rivers flowing with the color of blood?
Exactly. Susan Hollis writes of a striking parallel. She calls it a close parallel between the biblical account of Joseph and Potiphar's wife.
Yeah, the seduction story.
Of Joseph. With an Egyptian papyrus text on the tale of two brothers.
The tale of two brothers.
There is a James Allen who speaks of this story, this Egyptian account that resembles Moses' story. Neely Shupak says it's quite extraordinary, and he uses the word astonishing, the parallels to the seven-year famine in the Bible in this Egyptian seven-year stela.
Wow.
Stella.
So another reference back to Joseph in the Bible, in
yes,
Genesis.
Exactly. So there are many more references to the Exodus in ancient Egyptian literature than even the people who have studied it have suspected before the last decade or so. This is just like the work of Timothy Mahoney in his film Patterns of Evidence. This is groundbreaking. This is an additional mountain of evidence that supports the Exodus, and the list of the titles of the ancient Egyptian text that have the references to some catastrophic event in Egypt's history that is iconic in these texts. The titles of these texts are well known to Egyptologists.
So again, some of these texts are the destruction of mankind, which is again the celestial cow.
They're into cows these
years.
Yeah. Celestial cow book.
And then here it's listed as the admonitions of Ippur, but we call it the lamentations of Ippur because right. It's misnamed.
And then Hatshepsut's text.
Yep. And then we mentioned the tale of two brothers.
The story of Sinuhi.
And then the seven-year famine stela.
And this one will shock people. The Rosetta Stone.
The Rosetta Stone. So the people who interpreted that.
I mean, when we found the Rosetta Stone, scholars could not interpret hieroglyphics because they didn't know how to crack the code. But the Rosetta Stone had its text in three languages, and one of them was Greek. So it just opened up the study of ancient Egypt.
Yeah.
So the translators of the Rosetta Stone, they noticed a part that referenced a catastrophic event in Egypt's history.
An iconic event that flows through this literature, that Egypt was utterly destroyed. So, Fred, as we go through, again, we're just doing this thumbnail sketch, but Exodus parallels that are cited by these various scholars. For example, Hans Godic cites this Canaanite illness, in other words, plagues, cites the 10 plagues, cites walls of water, cites the drowning of the Egyptian army.
Yep.
And that's one scholar in the Egyptian text. And we could read the names of the text, but you really should get the book because people won't recognize these. El Arish Stella, the Spios, Artemidos, the Hearst Medical Papyrus, and so on.
Yeah, and he has a nice table in here that lists all these, and he gives a nice summary in the last column. For example, this next scholar, Eric Hornung, he covers where Egyptian text mentions a divine name in Exodus 3:14.
God's which we name, before. I am that I am.
And then Moses' contest with Pharaoh's magicians, which was an epic contest, actually.
Yes.
It was a slaughter.
And related to the primeval revolt. And so this is this time of the destruction of Egypt, this iconic event, as in the Rosetta Stone. Archaeologists refer to this as the primeval revolt. Like something happened in Egypt's history that was remembered for centuries afterward, a destruction. The next scholar, Gerhard Fecht, he writes of the divine name of God in Exodus chapter 3.
Yeah, and then Susan Tower Hollis, and he lists the year, too, where these authors published, in this case, 1982, and she mentions the Joseph seduction.
Yes, and then Rudolph Cohen, in 1983, mentions the plagues and references specifically Ippur.
In the next one, Nahum Sarna mentions Ippur again, but also Setna II, and again, the 10 plagues and the plague of blood.
Yes, and so I think to save time, Fred, what we can do is the dates go through from the 1980s through the 1990s through the first and early second decade of the 21st century.
Yeah, it's about 3 pages worth of this table.
Yes. And so you have the name of the Egyptian text and the scholar who published, so you can look it up, the year they published, and what they believed this was, the scholar's position on whether this was an event or a myth, or whether it was a myth based on an event.
Yeah.
And interestingly, so far, the ones we've listed, they think it's a myth based on an event. They think it's a myth maybe based on an event. They think it's a myth and an event. They think it's an event. Rudolph Cohen, you mentioned, about Ippur and the plagues, it was an event.
Yeah.
As we saw, as we read Ippur. So Brad Sparks is really helpful in letting you know the scholar's position. But if the scholar doesn't believe that there is a God who intervened on behalf of the Hebrews, then he's just going to think this is all myth.
Yeah.
Any possible parallel.
Yeah, in fact, they kind of mockingly on the whole Ippur thing, they say, well, it could never happen where the poor all of a sudden become wealthy and take over a nation.
Right.
I mean, when would that ever happen in human history unless there was a divine intervention?
Exactly.
But they don't want to consider the last part of what I just said.
Exactly. So the list goes on.
I mean, there's things that, did we mention the golden calf? I mean, there's all kinds of references.
In this list, again, the 7-year famine, the parting of waters.
Moses' birth story.
Yeah, and Moses' mother, Jochebed. I mean, these things referenced in ancient Egyptian literature.
In fact, the plague of darkness, and that's covered by one of the editors, William Propp.
Yeah, that's right. The national distress of Egypt as a general recollection of the Exodus. The chart continues with the drought, that happened at the time of Joseph. The chart continues with ancient Egyptian reference to the Asiatic. And remember back then, that would be Canaanite.
Mm-hmm.
The Asiatic exodus from Egypt. Joseph and Israelite slaves ruling houses. How's that from the papyrus Hebrew names in ancient Egyptian literature? Remember, Fred, the Brooklyn Papyrus?
Yeah, we talked about that on an earlier show.
The Hebrew names of servants,
slaves, yeah,
and especially women, because the boys were killed. References to the water split, the plague of darkness, plague of blood, men drowned, possibly looks like soldiers, death of the firstborn, the Red Sea crossing.
And the pillar of cloud.
Yeah, the flight from
when does
Egypt.
That happen in human history?
The pillar of cloud.
When as Patton warred across Europe, there was a pillar of cloud in his way.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't happen.
And this stuff from the writings of ancient Egyptians. So then Brad gets into the particulars. And again, we highly recommend this text. I mean, for one thing, when a pastor or a Sunday school teacher or a researcher, when they purchase a text like this, they help other people find out about all this evidence.
Yeah. Yep.
Because the publisher gets excited and the authors get encouraged. And who knows, there could be another Exodus conference, maybe at the University of California, maybe elsewhere, as additional evidence continues to pile up for the Exodus.
So again, highly encourage this book, and we're not selling it through our store.
No.
We're saying just go get it on Amazon.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, Fred, we don't have the license to publish these images, but I've been looking for them, and perhaps we'll find them in a source that's not copyrighted. But this image of the drowned soldiers in the Royal Amduet Underworld book about 1500 BC.
Yeah, it's real interesting.
I mean, the soldiers of Ra, that is of Pharaoh, this is just astounding that they've drowned in the sea.
Yep, they're in this water. The drawing is of water and kind of stick figures, but well kind of drawn,
yeah,
you know?
Right.
Egyptian, you can tell they're Egyptian.
Oh, yeah. Egyptian soldiers, the soldiers of Pharaoh drowned in the sea. So, Fred, that concludes our list of evidence for the Exodus. Fred, I want to thank you so much. This has been a labor of love, I know, on our parts, and how worthwhile it's been. I mean, to hear from a rancher from Kansas,
yeah,
Ray and his really son,
cool.
Reed,
yep,
and a shout out to you guys, and what a family that Reed gets to grow up in, other siblings too, successful family. Another older son has his own ranch.
Oh, wow. That's
down
cool.
the road in
yeah.
Kansas. So to be able to share this with Christians and even unbelievers that God's word is true in even the most extraordinary accounts, as we learn more, we find out the world is filled with the evidence for God's word.
So you listeners out there, call Peter Boyles and point him to our podcast
yeah,
of, the show, of
that's
these shows.
Right. RSR.
Say,
yeah.
Hey, yeah, there's no evidence. Peter Boyles, please listen to these shows and
yeah.
at least admit maybe there's some evidence.
Yeah.
But he probably won't.
RSR.org/Exodus.
Yeah. How easy is that?
And remember, the very first piece we gave was that the name Pharaoh is not an Egyptian
yeah,
title.
That's right.
It's a
Hebrew
word
title. Yep.
Given to the world.
Yep.
Imagine that. This insignificant tribe, where the God of Abraham is believed in by billions of people 4,000 years later, and the whole world refers to the ancient kings of Egypt as Pharaoh because of the Jews and because of Moses.
That's right.
Evidence for the Exodus. Fred, finally, the short story, If 10 Plagues Hit America.
Yeah, we got to get that. You're about ready to get that in PDF form, right?
Yes, that's right.
And it'll be downloadable.
Yeah.
And, you know, it helps the show if you can download it. I think you're going to only charge $10.
Yeah.
I'd probably charge a lot more, but, you know.
It really does help the program. We don't have a large foundation behind us. We don't have a small foundation
yeah.
behind us. We don't have a mega church
yeah.
behind us, but we have the Lord and we have our listeners.
Our listeners, which have been great.
Yeah. absolutely phenomenal. So I think you'll like it. And as with everything for the last 26 years, a 30-day money-back guarantee with everything that we sell.
Yeah, that's right.
So, hey.
So if you read the whole thing, and actually if you read the whole thing, that means you liked it because you kept reading it. But even if you read the whole thing and you decide you don't like it, money-back get back guarantee.
Oh, we've always said that for all these years. I mean, I don't know. At Barnes & Noble, if you buy a book and you don't like it or you disagree with it, will they give you your money back? Do you know? I don't think they will.
Yeah.
Does Amazon?
And the royalties when you watch a movie, I don't know, on Netflix. And
I don't like this
suffer
movie.
Suffer through the movie and
does
you don't like
AMC it. Theater, do they give you your money back?
Yeah.
You say it was a stupid movie. I wasted $30 on that movie.
Yep.
Yeah. If 10 Plagues Hit America by Pastor Bob Enyart, Denver Bible Church, I think folks will love that.
They will. Can't imagine somebody reading the first page and stopping. No, you'll keep going.
Yeah, it's too much fun.
Yep.
So, all right, Fred, thank you so much.
Thanks, Bob. This has been great.
And again, our website, rsr.org/exodus. For a written summary of everything we've covered, rsr.org/exodus. May God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. By the handiwork of God, tune into Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real, that's what I'm talking about.